Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And for today, I'm introducing a series of podcasts we're running as part of a partnership with FixFest, a one-day alternative-style conference run by The Fix, a project by copywriters for copywriters. In this series, one of the co-founders of The Fix, Glenn Fisher, interviews speakers leading up to the event, talking to them about this year's conference theme, AI or Die. In this first interview, Glenn speaks to Heather Murray, founder of AI for Non-Techies, about the industry's fear of AI and what excites her about the technology, and a great many more things as well. It's a speedy interview, but it's really great. And yeah, this is the first one in the series. So without further ado, over to Glenn.
Anything in the space of AI at the moment? We were just saying before we start recording, if you start now, you'll probably still be relatively new in the space. It's still that young, but you have been, you have identified the potential, shall we say, for AI and how it can be used, and cleverly and helpfully identified the fact that doesn't have to be just for technical, like sci-fi fan people kind of thing. It can be for non-techies. You seem to have done that quite early. And I wondered how, like, why? What kind of made you think, was it just purely you're an absolute capitalist and you're like, I see this going on? Or was there something, what was the actual trigger point where you went, I think there's something here and I'm interested in this. Obviously, you have to be interested in it to do it. What triggered that interest?
It's an odd one because I've never been a early adopter of anything. I'm not a techie, hence the non-techie business name. I'm not a technical person at all. My first experience of AI was, I was running a marketing agency up until recently. I've just wound it up to focus on the AI stuff. About 2 years ago, so before ChatGPT came out, I started to use an AI tool for one. We got a massive contract in and it was much bigger than what we were used to. And it was a big brand wanting to sell these £10 million products. And I basically, cut a long story short, I found an AI tool just by accident, just got by Googling around and seeing, you know, what can help me do the thing that I'm imagining I can do to help them. And I found this AI tool and it was magical. We got incredible results for this client. And then we did it again. And then we did it again. And my curiosity was, well, my interest was piqued, I think, at that point around what AI is. Skip forward maybe 5 or 6 months and ChatGPT came out. And I think spurred on by that past experience, I then began to think, right, okay, this is something I need to. I remember it's just stopping. I saw it. I started playing with it. And I remember my jaw dropping, going, wow, this is something like I've never seen anything like this before in my life. And then just going into my husband, who doesn't care at all about anything AI, digital at all. He doesn't even have a laptop. But saying, this is my thing. It was really strange. It struck me like lightning.
Yeah.
This is my thing. And at the time, it was this is how I'm going to differentiate my agency. We are going to be AI first. This AI thing can help us do services. It can help us. I could see it straight away from just playing. This is going to be able to help us be much more efficient. We can do new things with it. We can show other people what we're doing. We can maybe sell things onto other people. There is so much potential here because as a small agency, we were struggling. We was kind of, you know, up and down and up and down. We got this, you know, these couple of clients. And then we had enterprise style clients that were kind of closing and closing. And I could see us going on a slow slide. So I knew we needed to do something. I thought this was the thing. Sure. So I decided, I don't do things by halves. So I decided I'm going to dedicate about 3 hours minimum every single day, including Christmas Day, to just I'd get a bit obsessive about things, to just spending on AI stuff. So learning what I can, experimenting, interviewing AI founders, just gathering knowledge as much as I could.
Yeah.
And then I found out so many interesting things. I just started to share them on my LinkedIn. And I thought, oh, this is good. And then conversations started to happen naturally. When I said, oh, have you seen this? So just out of genuine excitement. Oh, we've just done this and this has just happened. And that started to go. And then people started to say, oh, can you show me how to do this? Showed them how. And I realized I actually really enjoy showing people how to do this in this way that I understand, because I'm never going to understand the technical side of things. And I don't want to. I wanted to know how it works for me, not how it works. And that's become my little bit of a slogan. And I was just fascinated that I had access to all these techie things, and I knew how to use them without being a techie person.
I mean, it's fascinating, genuinely fascinating. There's a few things in there that I want to pick about, and unfortunately, I'm not intelligent enough to hold all these thoughts in my head, but I'll attempt. The first thing I wanted to just take away from that was your amazing and admirable organic. Your openness to organic discovery and just flowing with something. That's a kind of, I'm hesitating to say God-given because I'm religious views are not relevant in this, but that's a different thing altogether. Maybe not in the AI world, I don't know. But that is like a really interesting thing to go, all right, that's interesting. And showing that natural curiosity is amazing and interesting. It just shows how that can organically start as a small thing, just like, oh, that's interesting, what's that, oh, that, and just going with the flow is like quite a good life lesson and business lesson to take anyway. But I before that, I just thought that moment when you obviously you'd seen the potential in the work you did for the client, and oh right, okay, this can make money, this can do this thing, this can help my job and help me offer something different. Was it just that, or was there something else? Was there another element? And I'm just interested, you might not know the answer, you might not have thought about it, but so much of the AI piece, as they say, is met with fear, and it's to be scared of AI, to be scared of what it can do, to be scared of some of the positive things that you talked about, efficiency and help and all these things, to be scared of it. Why weren't you scared of it? Or were you? What made you lean? Obviously, I can tell it immediately. You're a positive person. You're pushing forward. You're looking for ways like that. Was it that? What was the thing that kind of... Why didn't you fear it?
It's a really strange thing. I think excitement was my main emotion that I found that sort of drowned everything out. It's not to say at all that I haven't had many, many moments of going, oh, wow, oh, my God, the world is going to change dramatically. What's going to happen here? And I frequently do. I think it's my attitudes, but it's here. It's very much here, and to ignore it is you know, you can't. It's not possible. It's like trying to ignore the internet. So I'm embracing it, but I'm also keeping myself educated with all those risks and dangers, so I can be aware of them and not accidentally walk into problems. But I do think, you know, I never really think too much about the distant future, in AI, like that distant future could be 5 years time. So I really do think the world is going to dramatically change, and it does scare me. But I'm a bit of a kind of right here, right now type person. I live very much in the present, thinking right now I could do some good stuff. And as I've kind of expanded my network of other people in AI, I'm seeing some really good stuff, people using AI for good, and incredibly inspiring stuff that's making me think, let me get to know it really well. Let me show people and teach people, build a product, exit, and then I can go and use it for good myself. So that's become my plan as well. But yeah, there is definitely fear. I think it'd be stupid not to be scared of it. The overarching feeling I'm having is excitement at the possibility.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to hear. I could spend ages, and I'm kind of trying to keep it on the AI thing at the moment, but I'm fascinated to hear more from you about your past and how you got into the space where you were. And perhaps we can do that at FixFest, and we'll have the opportunity to talk there. But I'm thinking, like you saying, that you're doing all of this research, you're looking at these things as they're happening, you're in the moment, you're present in the space of AI at the moment. What is most exciting you about AI in this present moment? What's the things that you kind of like, well, that's cool, or I'm really enjoying using that. Where do you find it's most helping you out at the moment? What are the coolest things you're using?
I think, first, just overall, the rate of innovation and the feedback loop, how tight the feedback loops are. So if on something like ChatGPT, if you think, usually if you're using some form of software and you think that bit's really annoying, you don't for a second think it's going to be fixed within a couple of weeks. You probably wouldn't even think to give any feedback. So ChatGPT doesn't make it easy to give feedback, but they're getting feedback from somewhere because I guarantee they'll not only have fixed it, but they'll have added loads of other features to prevent that from happening in the first place. I find the fact that they're all battling with each other, ChatGPT and Claude and Gemini, all these companies battling with each other to be better, means that week on week, day on day, there's something new to see, which is so endlessly exciting for people with Magpie syndrome like me. It's kind of, oh, brilliant, oh, something new. So it's all constantly new every day. It never gets boring. But there's so much. I think I'm really interested, particularly in the realm of agents, AI agents. So you kind of have, you sort of have a little bit of a sequence, most people. So you will learn to prompt with LLMs, so like ChatGPT and Claude. You'll learn to kind of how to request information from them and how to get what you want out of it. That's kind of the first stage. And then you're going to start to build your own custom version of that, a custom GPT. Super easy to do. Takes 10 minutes to build one. And you start to think, right, I'll add my own information into that as a point of reference. And then it goes into agents. So you can build, and I'm still learning how to do this, you can build like a leader agent that controls other agents. And each one of those has tools, AI tools, and skills. So you've got an actual team. So you give them a problem and they collaborate together, work out the best way to come up with a solution, and then carry out the solution and give you the results. So you're not actually manually asking a question or waiting for a response, giving feedback, waiting for a response. That's all happening completely autonomously, which is just crazy. So I think one of the most exciting things about all of it is it's leveling playing fields, cliche, but it really is. Enterprises have got exactly the same opportunity as one-man bands like me at the moment, which is I can build and get, you know, make my one person business, I'm now one person, so much bigger. I can hit higher revenue goals now, just as me, with these AI agents potentially. And that's what's exciting me the most at the moment. It's blowing my mind as well. But
yeah, no, it's great to hear. I'm interested to hear more, certainly FixFest itself. I'm a little bit of a challenge just because I can imagine people probably experience this, and you've certainly, from the sounds of it, experienced it, and you called it Magpie syndrome, which I like. How do you, what, you're obviously an experienced person in running businesses and managing your time and doing having focus, and you clearly think you've got that, like, obsession and that, those elements, which is some of the magic that makes that possible. But how do you, with something where there is so much opportunity with AI, once you are able to overcome any fears people might have or worries about that stuff, and you start going, oh, actually, I see that as an opportunity, to see that as an opportunity, that's an opportunity. How do you control that kind of Magpie syndrome of there being so much? Do you almost shift back to analog and being like, right, I'm going to use these old principles and guide myself? What's your thoughts there? I'm interested in that.
It's physically limiting it with time blocking. So you have blocks of experimentation time, and then rigorous testing. I say rigorous for me, testing of what will work and what won't work. And again, it's a very different world, because if you want to try out a new tool, it's not a case of try it out and that's it. And if it does, you don't like it, stick it in the bin. And if you do, you keep it, because all of these tools are changing. So the tool you like might not exist in a couple of weeks' time. Tool you hate might get 10 times better in a couple of weeks' time. So I've been kind of teaching myself to sort of sniff out the potential in a tool as well. So that testing, so you kind of find potential in the experimentation phase, and then having testing and, you know, trying to integrate these tools into every day and trying to put them into workflows. So there's like a bit of the old school when it comes to workflows. How can this optimize this process a little bit better? But then a lot of experimentation. Does that answer your question? I feel like I didn't answer your question.
Whether it did, it was interesting to my questions are so vague and often rambling that we can easily get lost down different pathways. I wanted to get your thoughts on you were saying about the fact that there is all these options, there's all this stuff, but what's something that caught my ear? And I always think in terms of like objections and what people are worrying about, especially in the AI space. You spoke to the idea of things still being unfinished, the potential, the things that you're still experimenting. And I think that's a quality that it's good to be like that. I encourage that from a copywriting point of view. It's like nothing's finished, nothing's final. You're just trying to improve and try and all these iterations. It seems to me that with AI in the space it is at the moment, there will still be errors. There will be still be mistakes. There will be paths that you go down and go, oh, actually, that doesn't work out for me in that particular world. How do you, like, what's your thoughts on that kind of thing and being open to failure, if you like, or that makes it sound more dramatic, but a thing that you might think, oh, that's a way, and then it doesn't peter out. How do you manage that?
Yeah, I think the companies that are doing the one that I work, I do lots of AI training with companies, and the ones that are getting the best results have incentivized play with these tools. So they've kind of come up with little challenges, but not told people how, they've not instructed people as to how to get there. So it's kind of, here's a thing, find a tool that will help you get to this thing. And they are doing really well. They're the ones that are advancing and progressing to these next stages. And they're calling me in to ask, help them build stuff now, instead of still being stuck at that prompting phase. So experimentation and play is, yeah, it's critical at this point. And also accepting that the AI tool people, the creators, are still experimenting themselves. We've got these tools have been built quickly and have gone to market really quickly too. So they're full of glitches. So kind of to expect that, you know, we wouldn't normally expect that in a piece of software that we use and we've bought and we've integrated. If it glitched, you're going, oh my God, where's the support, tech support? That's not, you have to kind of chuck that idea away for things like ChatGPT. It glitches on me or has an error probably 10 times a day, but just carry on. You kind of need to know how to work around it, like you're working with a kind of like a beta version or something.
Yeah.
And this is a big giant world of betas.
Yeah, no, I think it just dawned on me then, because I think that's it is something that I think a lot of people would are probably getting to that point where people go, I'll give it a try, I'll have a look. And then they might do something and go, oh, this don't work, or this isn't all it cracked up to be, or what have you. But it's one of the, it's not like a finished product where you might buy it off the shelf and expect it to be of a certain quality, of a certain design, or even the concept of a product means it does something. We don't still know what it can do, all these things. So it's a very unique thing in its in that sense as well. And I think being open to that is a key thing for us, the user, and to go into that knowing that we don't quite know what's how it's working and what's going on.
Yeah, and also the learning curve to it. So just because you can open it and use it straight away and you can get a result doesn't mean there isn't a learning curve. And with things like ChatGPT, there's no instruction manual. You open it up and you kind of, well, what do I do with this? where do I get the information from? There's no credible source, hence me doing what I'm doing, but I want to build myself as a credible source. You kind of go, well, write me a limerick, or, you know, you don't really know what to do when you start it, depending on your background. I just wrote something in there. I think my very first prompt was, write me a song in the style of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or something. Like, it was just something like that. And I thought, great. And then I started to go, oh, do this. Oh, hang on a second. So, I think realizing that there is a learning curve is really important, that you do need to put a bit of time into learning how to instruct it. So even though you can speak with it conversationally, there is a technical side to it, or not necessarily technical. There's a rule book and there's a structure if you want to get good results. And that's not openly published anywhere. Well, it is, I suppose. They have these guides, like ChatGPT has a guide, Gemini has a guide, but these are very, very long documents, and often they're written by technical people, so they're not very accessible at all. Sure. So one of the things I plan to do is take all the Gemini ones, quite good actually, but I tend to plan to take those and make really easy versions of them, so you do actually have an instruction book.
Sure.
I'm starting with ChatGPT, here we go.
I'm going to rescue to that extent. I don't expect you to provide the entire guide right now, but for people who are maybe listening to this, watching this and thinking, okay, like, I get it. Like, Glenn, you're talking about AI, you're doing fixed first around AI, you're doing this thing. I'm relatively skeptical on that side of things. Not skeptical, but just, I'm just getting old, frankly. I feel like my granddad just going, what's a DVD? But I'm kind of learning and going into it more and going, all right, okay, yeah, I can use that like that. I can do this and what have you. People who are going to watch us talking to people like yourself and go, all right, okay, that's interesting. Okay, what would you recommend to someone who's going, okay, let me have a look at this. What's the first thing you would do with something like a ChatGPT or what have you?
I always say these three C's for basic prompting, which is character, context, and clarity. So something people often forget to do, and it annoys me when I see prompts that haven't got a character, is you have a task to do, and you walk into a room, and the ideal person to help you with that task is sat in the room. So what's their job title? What's their background? What are their skills? Start your prompt with that. So you say your task is you want to create some ideas around LinkedIn posts. So it'd be great to speak to a LinkedIn ghostwriter. Be even better to speak to a LinkedIn ghostwriter that has 10 years experience in AI. you can give them this background, so you can start to refine. These LLMs are drawing from this massive, massive data set, and you need to narrow that down as much as you possibly can with as much context as you possibly can to. So give it a character. Let it know who you are as well. It doesn't know who you are. It doesn't know where you're approaching this task from. So a character for you, for it, a character for you. And then just give it as much detail as you can. And I think the best thing, particularly for this audience, think of a really good copywriting brief. So you've got a brand new copywriter, you give them a brief, it contains information about your company, your purpose, your values. It's got examples of previous copy. That's amazing for prompts. So a good prompt has the level of detail that a really good copywriting brief would have in. So it's very specific as to outputs. It's very clear. And you've got characters as well. So set the character. Think of it like a brief. That wasn't as smooth as I find it.
like AI, we are still working out these things. I don't want to even say it, and I'm not going to say it, but regular listeners to the show will know my current forward expletive prompt that I'm working on. And I feel like I want to say it then. I'm not going to do it. That's a special hook that even you, Heather, don't quite know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And on that note, that basis, I don't want to take too much more of your time, especially me rambling on. I even just talking to you for this short time, because of your experience and because of that, because of the what you've been doing, it just opens up so much. Like, there's opportunity there. And I know people listening to this will be like, okay, I didn't think about it like that. So I am absolutely gassed, as they say in American high school, probably. I don't know. I think that's where they say it. To see you talk at FixFest, I cannot wait. If people would like to join us and see you speak, there's links everywhere to find a ticket. We're over halfway full, so don't hang about if you don't want to miss out. It's going to be a wonderful day. Heather, I can't wait to meet you in person and find out more about how you pre-AI, Heather. I'm intrigued to hear and how this magpie-based, very driven person came into being. But thank you so much for your time. And thank you for, even in that short space of time, giving a lot of suggestions and ways that you can start using AI to help you, and showing that as it shows in your career already and what you've been doing. And what is it, maybe how many years have you been kind of on the AI kind of front?
I've not long at all. Two years.
2 years. Yeah. I mean, that's an enormously small space of time, really, yet much stuff can be developed. So certainly not being left behind. Now is the time to start taking your lead and seeing what you're about. So thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to seeing you in July.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much, Glenn.